Welcome to But For Real, a variety show podcast co-hosted by two therapists who also happen to be loudmouth feminists. I'm Valerie, your resident elder millennial child-free cat lady.
And I'm Emerson, your resident chronically online Gen Z brat. And on the show, we'll serve up a new episode every other week that will take you on a wild ride through the cultural zeitgeist, mental health, and beyond.
You'll definitely laugh and TBH sometimes maybe cry a little because this is a silly and serious show.
Buckle up, my friends, and let's get into today's episode.
We're back!
You know, it's been a long time. And we haven't recorded in probably like a month.
We did like a marathon sprint.
We did a marathon to get a few sessions ahead. But now we're like, wait, not only are we back, but we're back with Aang, which is so exciting.
Super exciting.
Super exciting. So, no crazy intro. Well, I mean, we'll be crazy, but we'll see. But we're so back. And today we're back with one of our babes from Internal, honey. It's giving the Gaia Center. Our lovely M. Mortensen. M is a marriage and family therapist here at the Gaia Center. They work with individuals, couples, ethically non-monogamous relationship systems, families. I mean, you just kind of do it all.
All the things.
Yes. They are LGBTQIA plus affirming, honey. Kink positive, trauma informed, and genuinely one of the funniest people that I know. I'm so glad to have you here. Also, they have a cat named Pants. And he's very well loved for his mischief here at Gaia.
And I simply cannot let the episode continue
without talking about Pants.
Without at least getting the story about Pants and the washing machine.
You have to tell everyone this
story. We'll make it, you know, as condensed as possible.
Basically, this man is a gremlin. He's not quite a year yet. And when he was like a smaller kitten, one day I went to unload the washer and take it in to the dryer, and as I was switching it over, I don't know how, all of these little pieces of like pasta kept coming out, and it was tiny little pieces that just kept like falling out of all the clothes, and I was like, what's happening?
Cooked pasta.
Fully cooked pasta.
He had knocked, our pantry shelves are like right by the washer, and somehow he had climbed up to the very top and knocked an entire box of uncooked pasta into the washer, and I didn't notice it. Because who checks their washer for pasta? No one. So I start the load, hot water, cooks the pasta, and melted all the cardboard. So there was pieces of cardboard. Even when I was telling everyone on staff about this, I was wearing, there was pasta like in my shirt. There was like cardboard in the seam of all my pants. It took me like an hour to get the pasta off of everything, and I still miss pieces. It was...
Well, I can't even, all the like bits from the cardboard and the walk, that would piss me off so bad.
Yeah.
Oh, Pants.
Just new and new levels of mischief unlocked.
All the time. All the time.
I love it.
All the time.
Now it's time for our first segment, Tea and Crumpets, where we tell you what we can't stop talking about this week.
And oh my God, you guys, I pulled up to dinner with a friend last night and I learned an important lesson, which is, do not be listening to a super emotional part of a book right before you're supposed to walk in and meet your friend. Because I was like walking from my parking spot and I was like, I don't even know what happens yet. I'm in the middle of the scene. So it was emotional, but so good. Taylor Jenkins Reid, who...
Love her.
She's like, yeah, she's the one who did Daisy Jones. I never read it.
Daisy Jones, Evelyn Hugo.
Okay. But this was so good.
So...
It's like a...
Haven't read this one yet.
Female protagonist, NASA in the early 1980s.
Oh, cool.
So, highly recommend.
That's very cool.
And what's your tea?
Robin and Slater are two musical artists that have... They both dropped albums on the same day last Friday. And that has just been like a tiny pocket of joy on my car rides back and forth to places, because they're both like very, they're like dance pop albums, and I am a strong advocate for enjoying dumb stuff when things feel so heavy. Everything feels heavy all the time. Yeah. And so like silly things like pop music and like dance songs and things that are just like there to be fun are a nice escape. And both of them have been really great.
I've not heard of Slater, and I'm appreciating that while Robin has one Y, Slater has three Ys.
She has three Ys.
No, that's Slater.
Yes, she has three Ys.
Okay, mine is also, like, yeah, something, like, not important, and thank God. You know, mine is the Kitsch. Is that how you say it?
Yeah, Kitsch. Yeah,
Kitsch. Heatless flexi rod curls. Heatless. Now, did I buy a Shark Dyson dupe thingamajig maybe 5 months ago? Yes. Do I regret it? No. Uh-huh. One of the best hair tools I've ever used. And I like using the heatless throughout the week because I put it in and I go to bed. I mean, the convenience maxing is tea.
Does your hair wake up?
So I spritz it a little. Okay. I do 90% dry.
And listeners who are not watching us on YouTube, go to YouTube and see Emerson's fabulous curls.
Thank
because
you.
Gorgeous. But you're using this unicorn method, which I was telling you, it sounds hard.
So, yeah, just I look really crazy. There's like some biting that's happening. I'm biting it to, you know, work. And don't talk to me while I'm doing it because it'll fucking piss me off because my arms are burning. I'm locked in. I'm biting this little piece of metal. Like, there's just a lot of things.
And I know your family has paid for that.
Like, do not enter. I need to put like a D&D moment on the door. I'm like, don't. But it pays off in the morning, honey. Ooh, so we're here.
And thanks so good.
Thank you. I just feel like a princess.
Now it's time for Step Into My Office, where you get advice from your favorite professionally qualified, personally peculiar therapist.
Okay. Dear M squared and Val. My partner recently told me they're interested in possibly opening our relationship in some capacity, and I truly cannot tell if I'm genuinely interested in it or if I'm trying to be open to it because she wants to. On paper, I'm open-minded. I've listened to some podcast interviews about it, and I like the idea of autonomy and honesty and not pretending one person can meet every need forever. But I also worry that in practice, I'd feel too jealous. I don't want to agree to something just because I'm trying to be a good sport and then resent it later on. How do I know if this is something I actually want to explore versus something I'm trying to want because I'm afraid of losing my partner? And is jealousy a deal breaker or just part of the learning curve? Sincerely, Polycurious Pockets! Oh my God, and we were just talking about Polly Pockets and chewing on all of their shoes. And if you didn't chew on their shit, then you weren't neurodivergent, I guess. Or just
you did not find yourself
a sensory queen,
nearly choking on one of these tiny dolls.
Yes. If you weren't eating Barbie shoes, we can be friends. If you haven't had a choking scare, anyways.
Correct.
So M, yes, as our guest, you kick us off. What do you think?
Yeah. Initial thoughts. I think one, yes, jealousy is part of the learning curve. I don't even know that I would even say learning curve. It shows up all the time.
Yeah.
And you just have to talk through it. I think having that initial trepidation of, do I want to just do this because my partner wants to? Do I really want this? That is very important because I think a lot of people don't even get to that point or they don't question it. They're just like, well, okay, let's do it because they are too afraid of losing their partner. But like, it's important to continue to have this conversation of what it looks like and what your boundaries are with all of that. Because polyamory and ethical non-monogamy is so nuanced. And it can be done in so many different ways. And when you're just starting into it, I think a huge pitfall is people just being like, okay, we're going to be open. And everyone assumes everyone knows what that means. And it doesn't mean the same thing to two people that have been together for a while. It just doesn't. And so you have to have an insane amount of conversations to all of this. There's so many questions and caveats where I'm like, yeah. And on this one little email, we are now going to have 2 months of conversations and there's 60,000 questions that you need to ask and boundaries you need to talk about and like so many things. But that is the start of being like, even just acknowledging the two sides of, do I do it just because or do I actually want this? Then you have to start working on what actually want this means.
Because we know not only are the, you know, getting very clear and specific on what the agreements are, we know that's important. But also, you know, I think relationships in general, whatever kind of relationship we're talking about, is a skill set. Anyone can learn the skills.
Yes.
But it's dangerous when we assume that we already have the skills.
Yeah.
Because most of us don't.
Uh-huh.
And that's one of the things that I love so much about Martha Kaupe, who's a big clinician in the space of polyamory. And she has created this sort of like grid of here are all the different skills that people who are exploring polyamory or ethical non-monogamy should be considering.
Yeah.
And basically like kind of rating yourself. Where do you see yourself on all of these skills now? And having those conversations around for any partner involved in this, like, what are the skills that each of you are needing to work on developing?
Yes.
To get into it.
Yeah.
Lovely. Thank you, guys. Send everything up for me.
Okay.
We'll get into more, of course.
We will.
And now it's time for the DSM. In our DSM, all varieties of dysfunction, spiraling, and meltdowns are welcome. In this segment, we break down complicated concepts and common misconceptions about mental health, well-being, and tell you what we really think.
Today, the tea, of course, is on polyamory, also known as ethical or consensual non-monogamy, from M, our capitalized subject matter expert trademark. So we're going to throw some questions at you, and we'll just, you know, we can riff on it together, too.
Yeah.
But as a therapist and someone who also has personal experience with this, how would you say that sort of dual perspective shapes the way that you talk about this, both in and outside the therapy room?
I think balance is like the main thing. I think that it's impossible to expect or to not expect some of your personal experiences to color how you show up in the therapy room as a clinician. And it is also impossible to not expect that seeing things play out and working with people, that is not going to color my own personal like opinions and all of those things. So, but then I think the trick comes in knowing what to bring into the room and what to tap into when. Mm-hmm. I think it can be really beneficial to use some of those personal experiences or draw on those as a therapist to kind of build rapport, so to speak, with a client, because I think there's a stigma around being in like a poly relationship or ethical non-monogamy still, even though it is like on the, we're in the upswing of acceptance of it. I think there's still this like stigma about it.
Great.
And so knowing that your therapist knows and gets it and is like cool with the stuff is, I think, can really strengthen that trust and allows you to dig into more things. So I try to use that as a tool to like kind of ease some of those fears a little bit in the session. I think I also, where appropriate, will use it to like as some psychoeducation of stuff. Mm-hmm. Of just because of my personal experience, I know that this can be a pitfall that I've seen in either my relationships or other people's relationships. And if you're having trouble figuring out how to have your conversations or certain things like, this has worked for some people, what about this? So I think just knowing what to pull from and when and how to bring that in is really great. And I think working with other like polyamorous people and ethically non-monogamous people, it's really, and monogamous people too, being able to have that, I mean, it feels like a like behind the scenes look of how people relate to each other and how other, it's like, it kind of forces, not that I have to be forced, to have an open mind or like creative thinking about how connection happens. But it's just a constant reminder of this is not one size fits all. And relationships are not one size fits all, which is cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think it's just always interesting. You know, I maintain that to be a helpful, valuable therapist for someone does not usually mean that you have to have shared all of their life experiences, right? There's just rarely... Now, if there's a particular thing that they're really wanting or needing to work on, like, certainly I can see the value. Like, I've, you know,
of course.
You and I, Emerson, have both supported folks who are in various sort of polyamorous structures. And I'm like, I know enough to be dangerous, right? I know some of the skills, the concepts, like, all of that. But yeah, I do think that there are times where it can just add another layer of understanding and depth. When a clinician, whatever the thing is, has that lived experience.
Yeah. All right. M, when you think about how monogamy, quote, kind of became the default, right? What do you think most people don't realize about the history or the systems kind of behind that norm and how that impacts where we are?
I always feel like
every time I start to talk about this, I feel like Velma in, like, the end of Scooby-Doo, where I'm, like, pulling the monster mask off, and I'm always like, it's always capitalism! Surprise!
The patriarchy!
It's the patriarchy! And capitalism! Who's surprised? It's either that, or it's the, like, meme of the red string murder board. Uh-huh. Like, that. Yes. I feel like that, too, where I'm like, and this, too, and also this, and then.
So I don't let me run a pin to another picture.
Don't let me connect. I will try to keep the red string out of this and try to sound as, like, sane as I can. But I think, like, capitalism. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think everyone is pretty well aware that, like, the construct of marriage started as property transfer.
Yes. Yes.
That's just, I mean, capitalism.
Business so, partnership.
Business partnership. Mm-hmm. You take this, I take this. I think there's elements also, I think that goes into the nuclear family, too.
Yeah.
Of, like, if you have something that is your property, that is yours alone, it's easier for, one, you to control it, and two, to be sold stuff to, and to be charged for stuff, and to be, you know, like, mm-hmm. you have this sense of control and ownership, which means you get to, I don't know, it just, like, drives that capitalism feel of thing, and, like, buying things, and selling things, and needing
and
things,
owning yeah.
things, and it just drives that. It's easier if there's two people that come together mm-hmm. on a thing. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, this idea that we have to be self-sufficient, that has led to the taking away of community. And you don't have to be, not that if you live on a commune or if you live with close communion with your neighbors that you're poly, that's right. what I'm saying. But let's say I need a leaf blower for my yard work and I'm not in super close community with my neighbors, I just go out and buy one.
Right.
And so does my neighbor, and so does their yes. neighbor, and so does their neighbor. As opposed to being in community with lots of people that have different strong suits and different, like, niches of things they're good at and different things that we can all appreciate and share together, mm-hmm. then you go to them for that leaf blower and you don't need to go buy one. Well, that's a problem for capitalism. Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Because everyone needs a leaf blower and everyone needs to own this thing and be good at this thing. And so I think it came from siloing people off and keeping you,
I don't know,
that, like, rat race.
Yeah. What's that individualism, yes. right? Like, yeah. that rugged American,
yes.
for what we can talk about culturally here for America, where it's, yes, not only does everybody have a leaf blower, but maybe I have the best, uh-huh. I have the best leaf blower, uh-huh. you know, and we all are supposed to be benefited from having individualism, whereas cultures that, like, thrive off of collectivism and have
yeah.
for years, and then you can see different relationship structures
yeah.
in collective societies where, like, they're happy or, like, they share,
uh-huh.
you know, they don't have, like, the constraints of capitalism, you know,
right.
like,
yeah.
in their structures, and, like, they yeah. live holy and good.
Yeah.
So it's not just the American way of
yeah.
it all, the Western yeah. way, I yep. feel.
Right. And yeah. it's, if we all need to have a leaf blower and this,
right.
if we need to have this, all of this stuff to make our life work well, and we apply that same logic to our marriage.
Yep.
My marriage needs to have all
yes.
of these things
yep.
to make it work, and our expectations for that are higher and higher.
Yeah.
We're applying the same logic that we apply in the marketplace
yep.
to
yes.
our marriages,
yes.
and then we become unsatisfied customers of our
yeah.
partner's marital services,
true.
As Bill Doherty would say.
and yeah.
And versus, well, what if this partner is really good at these things
uh-huh.
or brings these gifts, and this other partner is really good at these things or brings these
yes.
other gifts, right?
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
It's that arguing about the scarcity mindset, too, that comes
mm-hmm.
into it a lot. Also of, like, there's a tendency to feel like once I have something good, or this is mine, like,
mm-hmm.
this is my partner, my whoever, that, like, that's a limited resource.
Yes.
And, like, the connection you have or your relationship or the skills that they bring or, like, whatever is limited to you
mm-hmm.
and to, like, your, I don't know, relationship. And that, like, you can run out of that and you have to protect it at all costs.
Well, then there's threat behind that,
exactly.
right?
Yeah.
So then, yes, just, like, then the kind of discourse goes into, like, well, if he wanted to, he would. And I hate that. I hate that so bad, where there's just all of these really, really intense, you know, like you were saying, like, expectations
mm-hmm.
on what it means to be in relationship
yeah.
because the chip keeps moving higher and higher of
yeah,
what
exactly.
we are owed with one another, which
mm-hmm.
I just think is not true.
Yeah. yeah. So there's that misconception of there's only so much to go around.
Yeah.
Another misconception I think of a lot is these people just aren't able to commit.
They oh yeah.
an issue.
Yep.
So I'm
commit
curious,
avoiding.
Like, what are
yes.
the common misconceptions that you hear, whether from clients or just culture at large, about what this actually is?
Mm. I think there's a ton. There's like a bajillion. I think, and a lot of it comes from just from those ideas. And if you are solely operating off of that idea of ownership and the capitalism and like scarcity and all of that, then polyamory and ethical non-monogamy looks like one. I think one is that everybody's dating everybody. Mm-hmm. And that's not the case.
It's total anarchy.
Yes, exactly. It's just one big, I don't know, weird orgy. I don't understand what people think it is. But it's not that. It's so nuanced. And one person's way of doing poly is not the same as somebody else's way of doing poly. It's not one size fits all. I think that's another one that people are like, poly is one thing. And mm-hmm. ethical non-monogamy is one thing. And it's
just being open entirely. Right? Oh, yeah.
There's no rules.
Anything goes.
Yeah, it's the wild west. And it's like, really not. I think that's another one is that there's no real commitment. Like, you can't commit. People only do polyamory or E&M or whatever if they can't commit to somebody. Which is not true, because you have to really commit. If you're doing poly, you have to let.
No, there's actually a ton of commitment.
There's so much commitment
that people don't know about.
And I think some people also use it as like, people do it so they can cheat openly.
Yes, they always say that.
Or there's no cheating in poly, which is untrue. Mm-hmm. You can cheat.
Of course.
In poly.
You can break the agreement.
Break the agreement, which is cheating. And I also think another one that gets thrown in a lot, which was part of the callers or the writer-ins, polys. The question was that jealousy doesn't exist because E&M is magic. And, that's not true. It fully exists and is very present. And you just had to work through it. Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like the other one, it's the Wild West and, you know, cheating's off the table.
Yeah.
You know, so no one's getting jealous because everyone's just, you know, doing whatever the fuck, which, like, just is not true. Yeah. And much like Polycurious. Polly Pocket was bringing up about jealousy. You know, how do you actually work with jealousy instead of just white knuckling through it or acting like it's not a part of relationships?
Yes.
Especially in other relationship structures where we're maybe having a lot more people there's different structures and different dynamics and different relationships. So what about if you can speak to the jealousy piece there?
Yeah, I think the first thing, like first step, is acknowledging that it's there in the first place. Like, you have to say it. And you have to be open to having those conversations and bringing that to your partner or partners and saying, I'm not feeling great. Like, this ain't it, chief. I'm dealing with some jealousy. I think you have to be able to acknowledge it within yourself and acknowledge it to your partners. Let them know that's what's happening. That doesn't always mean that your partner is then responsible for taking care of your jealousy. Yes. Or your partners are like, by me saying, share that with your partner, doesn't mean always run to them and be like, I feel jealous, stop doing what you're doing. Yeah. That's not it. You do need to address it, but then there's also a combination of like self-soothing, having maybe changing a boundary if it comes to that. Maybe, but you have to have open conversations. So that's like the first thing. I think the second thing is like, once that light is on, it loses its power. Once you turn the light on in the room and name the jealousy, and then you start to dig and name, like, typically what's happening, the message behind that jealousy is that there's fear of being replaced, of losing this relationship, of losing something you value. And once you can acknowledge that it's that fear, then you can start to see, okay, well, then how can we reassure that fear? Mm-hmm. How do we make that fear feel less threatened? Are there certain phrases, like, after you go on a date, you always come back, and I know that we're going to have a connection point after you go on a date. Mm. Because my jealousy is telling me that I'm about to lose something.
I'm not safe.
Mm-hmm. I'm scared. And so you have to get to the bottom of that. Otherwise, it could just look like I'm being controlling, and I'm telling you can't go out with this person, and that's not what it is. It's a fear.
I feel like in culture, there's a lot of what about blank, right?
Yeah.
Like, a lot of focus on all the ways in which it can go poorly.
Sure. Well,
and understandably so, but hello, monogamy. There's a lot of ways that goes poorly.
Yeah, clearly.
Also,
yes.
And I think there's not enough conversation around what does it look like when it goes well and the green flags. And I have such a beautiful example of this, like with my brother and his relationships. But for those people who've maybe never seen in real life an example of this going well, what can that in its many configurations what can that look like, or what are some of the joys that come out of that maybe are not available in just a monogamous relationship?
Yeah, I think, well, one, you get a really solid understanding of Google Calendar. So, like, that's great.
Logistically.
Yes, awesome. You are, like, on it with Google Calendar. And also, I mean, you should probably just kind of start to learn the rules of D&D because...
At least one of your partners will
it's inevitable.
Yes. Join a campaign.
You will be in a campaign and you will be playing D&D. So just
fucking get used to it. I know.
Get in there because it's happening. But I think aside from that, one, there is so much communication, which I think, one, you're going to find a lot more self-exploration that you have to do. You learn so much about yourself in what your boundaries are, what you like, what you don't like, what you're okay with, how you approach other people. And not that you don't get that in monogamous relationships, you do, but like you are faced with it like head on all the time. And you really have to question, like, do I like this? Do I not like this? Am I okay with this? Am I not okay with this? Is this okay for the group? Is it, you know, like you're just always checking on that. I think you also, there's just, I don't know, so many friends.
You get so many friends. This partner's friends and this partner's friends.
Yeah, and I really value the, it's a constant learning thing, and maybe I just am a dork when it comes to learning. I like to be a little uncomfortable sometimes and learn new things, and so I appreciate being able to, like, have these lovely conversations and, like, grow and learn more about myself, learn more about my partners. I feel like there's just so many opportunities when it's going well to grow, which I very much value. And I see a lot of, like, the pressure gets taken off. I think one of the big things is, we kind of touched on it earlier, when you're in a monogamous relationship, all of that pressure gets put on you to be one thing for one person. And that thing, like, I found the one. And
it's forever.
And you're my person. Mm-hmm. Is that intimidating?
Yeah, and if I grow in this specific way...
Yes.
I hope you better grow in that specific way, too.
Yes. That it's like, you have to be able to meet all my needs all the time. And if you don't, you're somehow failing at this relationship and failing at me. And I just, like, that pressure kind of gets relieved a little bit in poly, because you're like, well, I don't have to be great at that. Mm-hmm. Because I know that my partner can go and go on the super dorky dates that I don't want to go on.
Mm-hmm.
And go hike a mountain, which I... love, but I also don't necessarily want to do that every Saturday. Mm-hmm. And you do, and I don't want you to feel sad that you can't go do that. So, yeah. Like, have that.
It's so fun for you.
Yeah. I just... different growing opportunities. Less pressure.
I like that.
Yeah. Well, it's not, you know, content for the internet if we don't talk
red flags. So, we know some of the greens. We know what's going well. What are some of the red flags where you're like, wait a minute? And perhaps patterns or things that you notice, or, you know, when a client is using either, like, poly language or trying to fall back on different relationship structures to avoid rather than to feel like they're building something authentic to them or what they're looking for. So what do you notice there where you're like, I'd like to think about this with you more?
Let's have a conversation.
Yes.
I think anything that is just control masked as being open, which... can look so many different ways, and this is so nuanced, and I'm not saying all veto power is controlling, but it gets used that way. And when I say veto power, if one of your partners, if you have, like, a primary partner or whoever, if your partner gets to say, you can't date that person, that's not always a bad thing, but a lot of times it gets used as, like, just a control. You're not allowed to date that person because I feel threatened, or you're not allowed to date that person because of whatever. If they get blanket veto power, I think that typically when I see that, I'm like, why though?
Yeah.
That's a lot of control. I think anything that is like, if you're not checking in regularly with all partners, that just gives me red flags. Like, you need to be, I would be shocked if somebody is ethically non-monogamous or polyamorous and their rules or boundaries haven't shifted over the years. Or, like, when you started, you had this one set and then you never went back and you never said, well, remember that time that we had this miscommunication, or I thought when you said no, like, no no other committed relationships. It meant moving in, and you thought committed relationship meant texting every day. Like that. Mm-hmm. And then we had that conversation, but we never went back and readdressed our rules. Like, I think the rules and the boundaries need to shift, but that can only shift if you're having regular check-ins. So if somebody's not checking in frequently and addressing those things, and if you're not talking all the time and not checking in, that gives me like red flags. And I think another one that, not necessarily a red flag, but is a pitfall, like common pitfall slash mistake. It's not on purpose, so I don't know that, whatever. It is like not having shared definitions for things.
Yeah.
You say you don't want to be dating anyone else. We're not going to date anyone else. We're just whatever. Okay, well, what does dating mean?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Does going on a date, is that dating? Is dating, like, labels? Okay, well, what's a label?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've seen that come up a lot with the whole idea of non-hierarchical.
Yeah.
Yes. And, like, what does equal partnership mean?
Yes.
And it's something where it's, like, the partner, let's say, who there's an original primary partnership, but then now there's a new one of those has a new partner, and that partner wants to be equal and not secondary, and the partner's like, I want that too, but like, are we defining that in the same way?
Right. Yeah, I think it happens a lot. I mean, happened to me. Mm-hmm. And I was in a relationship with somebody for 3 years and open the entire time, and at one point I said, oh well, we're in a hierarchical relationship because we lived together and had for a while, and we were, you know, nesting partners and like primary partners. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, well, that to me feels hierarchical. And they were like, excuse me, what? No, we're not. Mm-hmm. And I was like, wait, we're not.
Yeah.
We're defining this differently.
Right.
What? Mm-hmm. So like, it happens all the time.
Yeah.
So there's like common pitfalls, but not having that. And then I think the last one that like maybe a controversial hot take, but I think that don't ask, don't tell. Polyamorous relationships. I feel like that's the antithesis of what a poly relationship is.
Right.
Should be like
antithesis to of like openness.
Openness.
Yes.
Exactly.
Consent. Yeah. Like you're all, everyone is supposed to be on the same page, and we're all jumping into this so that we can make a new way of forming connections.
Yeah. Yes.
And everybody is consenting to all of this. And if you're doing a don't ask, don't tell thing, there's this just innate sneakiness.
Mm-hmm.
And not everybody's on the same page. There's always something that's sort of hidden.
Yeah. And that doesn't mean that, like, you need to share every graphic detail of your encounters.
No.
Right? But if there's that kind of cloak over it,
that potentially breeds
that in other aspects of the relationship.
Yeah. Exactly. And then you can't trust.
Yeah.
Because then, you know, our brains fill in the holes. Mm-hmm. And they fill in the gaps of, oh, I didn't hear from you while you were on that trip from 9 to 2. And how do I know what you did? And then you start to fill things in, and then you're like, oh, 3 months down the road, who are you texting? What do you do? You know, it just like grows.
The culture has gotten a little chaotic around this topic. Talk discourse, to which we know, because I'm chronically online, you know, poly as evolved moral superiority versus poly as like a literal slur. This is what a certain, like, why do all these people end up polyamorous? You know, kind of gross, whatever. So what do you make of like culturally where we are right now?
Well, I think one, just in general blanket statements on any very nuanced group of anything gets squicky. Mm-hmm. It just does. But I love that polyamory and ethical non-monogamy is like on the come up.
Yeah.
That's great. Love that. But the dangerous part is that like poly is more evolved and like getting this like moral superiority about it, and also shuffling off the people that are in those types of relationships into one specific box and category because it's so nuanced. I think that it's not that polyamory is more evolved. Mm-hmm. It's that they're having open, honest communication. That's what's evolved about it. It's not that it's poly. It's just that you're having open, honest communication and sharing things open and honestly. Everything's on the table. There's nothing assumed. Well, there shouldn't be. Nothing assumed and, you know, all those things. And that can happen in monogamous relationships as well. Mm-hmm. It's not that one's better than the other. It's just that this one is using a lot more communication and direct honesty and allowing people to choose. You don't just like slide into poly. That's not a default. And monogamy is a default.
Right.
And like,
you've been dating for however many years. I guess it's time to get married.
Mm-hmm. Oh, we've been married for this long. I guess we have a kid.
Relationship escalator.
Exactly. Right. You just get on and you start going and then you get at the top and then you just get on the slide and that's that. And you don't really have a choice in that. But you have to choose polyamory. Mm-hmm. Whether or not that's like a baked in identity. And I know some people that's who I am as a person. This is how I relate to people. This is how I feel the safest. And like that is baked into their identity. I think for me personally, it feels like a choice that I choose to commit to with a partner or not. And I don't think either one is morally greater than the other. Mm-hmm. I know people who identify as both as like, this is my core to my identity, who I am as a person. For me, it doesn't feel like who I am as a person. It feels as like, this is a choice I can do. Mm-hmm. And this is a relationship style and a choice I can make, but I have to work real hard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's fine. Both are fine. But I think that it's not that poly is better or more evolved. It's that poly requires honest communication, but you can have that monogamy too. You just have to choose it.
Yeah, and I love that idea because I think this is similar to other aspects of identity where it's like, for one person, it might feel like core and non-negotiable.
Yes.
That this is just the way that I am, and so this is how it just has to be for me in any of my, you know, romantic partnerships, whatever. But for another person, it could be like, sometimes that's worked for me, but it's not what I require. Yeah. It's not that core to my identity. So I think that's one of the nuances that gets flattened a lot of times.
It does, yeah.
Okay, so what would you say that polyaffirming therapy, whether that is with a clinician with lived experience or not, actually means? And why does it matter that therapists, even if they're not intending to specialize in this, understand what polyaffirming therapy means?
Yeah, I think, well, I mean, full stop. Nobody likes to be judged.
Yes. Period. And therapy especially. Like, hello.
You would like to be able to bring stuff to your therapist and not feel like you're getting the side eye or like getting corrected or, you also don't want to go into therapy and feel like you have to educate your therapist.
Yeah.
And that shouldn't be the person who is getting therapy. That's not their job. Mm-hmm. Is not to like give you information about how they live their life in a way that, because you haven't, I don't know.
Like you can do some of that learning yourself, even if the specifics of their situation are unique to them.
Yes. Like you, certain elements of it and certain, you know, like terms and ways that it works are important to know, because if somebody comes into your, I think if somebody comes into the room and you don't have that kind of knowledge, it's easy to step in to making comments or saying things. It's just as easy as saying like partner or partners, right? Just adding an S on there to make people feel more at home in the space and not assuming. I think that is where it gets, I don't know, can feel constricting and bad and judgy, is when you assume that the way that you live your life is the way everyone should live their life.
And like, generally that's, we don't recommend being that.
Yeah, generally that's just not the case.
Not the vibe.
Not the vibe. And so I think that comes across a lot because, especially in society, like monogamy is just such the default. Mm-hmm. And there's so much misconception about polyamory that if you are not educating yourself on it, if you're not seeking out that information about what that looks like and the realities of polyamory, when that walks in the room, you can, I mean, step in it, kind of.
Yeah.
And say some things that are gross and judgy and make your client feel judged and shitty.
Yep.
And then, they're not going to feel safe to be able to share and work through attachment stuff and, like, all of the things. They're not going to feel safe to bring that to you. Mm-hmm. And so that's, I think it's important.
Totally.
Because attachment and relationships aren't just one-to-one. They look very different. And I think we prioritize the like husband, wife, partner, one to one. Like we prioritize that. Mm-hmm. And that gets seen as like your main source of fulfillment. And as a therapist, if you're only focusing on that, you're missing community. You're missing close friendships that bring so much. You're missing like other partners that are enriching lives if you're only focused on the one.
Take us home.
But for real. But for real. You're not more enlightened for being poly. Surprise. And you're not less evolved for wanting monogamy. Also surprise.
Shocker to everyone. The goal for anyone interested in being in a relationship can be that they feel safe, alive, and honest with themselves and their partners in whichever relationship structure they choose. Polyamory is not unlike monogamous relationships in a lot of ways. It requires thoughtfulness and boundaries, agreements, and the respect that monogamy is given in our societal realm. Like, they should have that too. That's just how that works.
Love is love.
Yeah.
Amen.
Just
amen.
And now our musical segment. Now that's what I call Urquhart, where Emerson and I each share a song with each other each week as representatives of our respective generations. We tell you a little bit about the song or artist, and then we press pause, we share the song with each other, and then we come back for our live reactions. And we're capturing it all on a Spotify playlist linked in the show notes for you.
When we have a guest on, we just like to let our guest take the wheel and school us with tune of your choosing. Tell us why you picked it. We will do a live listen. Listeners, you can find it on the playlist linked in the show notes. Mm-hmm. And then we'll do a live reaction.
Oh, good. Yes. So this is Dopamine by Robin. Mm-hmm. I picked this one because, one, it's off the new album that came out last Friday. I think, one, like I said, fun, silly, like, dancey stuff that is just like a breath of fresh air because everything's so heavy. So it's just a nice chill. It's not chill. I mean, I guess it's chill. Whatever, it doesn't matter. It's not heavy. There's no heavy subject matter, but it is kind of that, another poly term, I guess, came from poly, is NRE, that like new relationship energy. And this song is about dopamine, obviously dope, and knowing that like you know, it's just dopamine. You know your brain is flooded with chemicals, but it still feels so real and so fun. Yay. And so I'm just going to lead into that a little bit. Nice. And like, I know it's a chemical flood happening, but like, God, it's really fun right now.
Enjoy that Limerence phase. Okay.
Limerence, indeed. I'm like, we need to go to the club. Yes. I need a drink.
Although, I would like the club to be as
demure as possible.
As understimulating as that music video.
We were all just shitting and dying. It was great. It really is. Yeah. She looks beautiful. She looks so fresh. Like she's about to do like a Neutrogena or like an Olay moment.
Like zero makeup, not a stitch.
Oh my God. Like,
and no complication in the sets, the choreography, just like purity, simplicity, and joy.
It's just gorgeous.
I'm obsessed.
Yeah, it is chill. Like it is like a dance pop song. But it is.
But it has that vibe where you're like, yes, you can have moments where you're dancing, and then it kind of
slows
down. It's nice. I get goosebumps every time it starts. I'm always like, it's like a, I don't know, like a weird scratch in my brain. Dopamine.
Okay.
And now for our last segment of the show, welcome to Fire Dumpster Phoenix. It is rough out there, y'all, and we need all the hope we can get. It's time to go dumpster diving for some positive news and rise from the leftover Happy Meal ashes together.
Oh, I found this one, which I was gagged. I was like, wait, this is about the Nashville Public Library. They are offering free appointments for their, what they call the Memory Lab, which is just like all this fancy equipment that is helping you turn your physical media, such as your VHS tapes, film, or any negatives that you have, digital, so that they can be preserved and stored without risk of physical damage. They're just really enjoying this like creative space of digitization, seeing everyone's stories coming together with the possibility of preserving memories for generations to come. I think the article was just like, hey, like we don't necessarily have equipment for this dying media anymore to be able to turn it around for people's wedding videos, home movies, all of those things. So I just thought, oh my God, they're doing this in a couple of other places, but I loved that they were doing it here in Nashville. So I thought that was tea. I also love the library.
That's great.
No, I'm like wow.
Not me just imagining those digital files going onto a hard drive and buried deep in the ground where the next version of humanity
is gonna
1,000 years from now will find it because we will kill ourselves off. I just turned it dark.
And then then the moss comes and takes us all.
You just deeply uprooted me from my groundedness that I worked so, I'm just kidding. And Wellbutrin and Pristique clocked in for this morning.
I will fix it with this story. from Andy Corbley at the Good News Network.
I would love to hear it.
Emerson and I, would you love a dog story?
Oh, we fucking love dogs. Oh my God.
Yes, I love
And this dog is no exception. So there's this dude, Luis Perez, who's been battling MS. Mm-hmm. He lost his vision at 23. He's now 45. He gets regular plasma injections to help combat his symptoms. And in 2024, with the nonprofit Dogs, Inc., he was matched with this black lab, Jerry.
Jerry!
Who's really improved Luis's confidence and socialization. Jerry is a trusted friend and loving companion. And wait, also a hero.
Oh my God.
Because recently, Luis was having pain and discomfort, and he was like, this is just my MS, duh. But it was like there was something different. There was a lot of pain moving his left leg. And so he was just chilling in his recliner, basically. And Jerry was acting very unusual, kept coming over, putting his head on this part of Luis's leg, kept doing it. And after this went on, they're like, maybe we should go to the hospital. There's something funky here. And after hours of waiting and testing, sure enough, it was a DVT, blood clot in his leg.
Oh, my God.
Exactly in the spot where Jerry had been laying his head. And DVT, if it goes not addressed very quickly, like that same day potentially can be very catastrophic. So, so yeah, thanks to Jerry alerting to the symptoms, he's okay.
I love when people name their animals like
human names.
Human names. Yep. I'm like, Jerry, I love it so much. I can just see him in my mind's eye and he's just delicious.
Oh my God.
Dogs. Okay, so we're going to round it out with just a little pew, 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 rapid fire questions here. Kick us off.
Because, you know, we just got to ask.
Yeah.
All right, and the most insufferable thing someone has ever said to you about being Polly, go.
The most insufferable
thing? And let it rip.
Oh, my God. Honestly, I think it's probably my mom.
Shout out mom!
Which
shout
makes
mom.
It tea.
Everything's fine. We love mom. Honestly. But there's learning curves. Yes. And she said it was the orgy thing. She was like, oh God, Emily Margaret. She said, oh God, Emily Margaret. Are you so what? You're just living on a commune and you're just having orgies all the time?
And I was
yes,
like,
yep. Yes, I am. And I'm not even going to correct you. Have a good day.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Related. What is the most chaotic E&M term that you've had to explain to a client or someone with a straight face?
What is the most chaotic one? I feel like more of the chaos when I have to explain things comes when, like, having to explain kink things, obviously, to people with a straight face. Poly things, I think... I have had to explain to my mother what, I don't know if this is necessarily Polly, but like, she was having a question about, along the orgy thing. I don't know. She was stuck on the,
stuck
on the orgy thing. A comment was made about just like watching what happens and just being an observer. And so then I had to explain what a cuck chair was.
Which is
the thing. I had to explain what... That cucking is not the same as polyamory. And my mom was white-faced.
Yes, sure.
Yeah, having to explain the difference between cucking and polyamory was...
I had to explain to some clients the difference between polygamy
and
polyamory.
Sure.
I remember briefing me on that one. I was like, not the same thing at all. Thank you so much.
Yeah, that was an interesting one not to explain.
Okay, hot take. Who's harder to work with in therapy? The newly poly couple who just discovered E&M on TikTok, or the monogamous couple who hasn't had a real conversation in 4 years?
That one.
Period.
That's true.
That one.
A lot of resentment in that one.
So much resentment. And also, like, the new one. I can start with that.
Oh, yeah.
Y'all don't know anything.
I can hold this class.
Exactly. Y'all know nothing. And that is great. Love that. I am a
plotter. I'm so glad that you came here instead of purely consulting TikTok.
Yes, exactly. Yes. Call me Whoopi Goldberg. Is that Ghost? The Potter Joe?
Yes.
Demi Moore.
Yes,
Oh, man. Okay, I'm throwing out my last question in favor of a new question, which is... Oh. In senior hot dog barrette, what is your favorite barrette in your collection?
Oh my God. And or earring.
And or earring.
Maybe we need both.
Ooh, okay.
Barrette and earring.
Barrette and earring. I think Barrette, I do love my hot dog Barrettes. They're pretty great.
No, they're tea.
I think I have a butter clip. There's like a hair clip.
Oh, yeah.
That I love seeing the butter. Butter. I love the butter clip. And then earrings. I just got a pair of, I like stupid earrings.
They're stupid.
Thank you. I don't think they're stupid. Other people, maybe. I just got a pair that looks like a goldfish in a bag. And it's like a little, tiny little cellophane bag that somebody put resin in and like a little goldfish. And so they just look like little goldfish bags.
Wait, that's so cute. You're like Darla from Nemo. They have like little Nemos on your ears.
Yeah, I do. Those are my favorite currently, yeah.
Yay! Final question.
Yes.
And this is for the people, you know, the proverbial. Someone sitting in their car right now, having just agreed to open their relationship, and they're absolutely spiraling. What's the one thing you want them to hear?
Ooh. That is, it's okay, take a breath. One, take, stop. Don't spiral in your car. Or do, it's okay. But then you have to take a breath. But you have to listen to yourself first before you agree to things. Get yourself into a situation you don't want to be in.
Yeah.
And that means you have autonomy and you have agency. Then you get to be the boss of what you choose to do and what you choose not to do. And if you decide to open up the relationship, that's not permanent. You get to walk it back if you need to for your safety and your mental health and your soul and your sparkle. If you need to bring it back, it's not permanent. If it's permanent for your partner, that's okay. It doesn't have to be for you.
And it sounds like a big part of that is
slow your roll.
Slow your roll. Figure your roll out right now.
Honestly, take a breath.
Yeah. Take a breath. Slow down.
Yeah.
I love it.
Perfect. Thank you.
Before we wrap up, did want to let folks know, because we've got listeners from all over, but for those of our listeners who are in the Nashville area, tell them about like the group that you're going to be starting soon and what's it for.
Yes. Well, it's for fun. No, we're starting a like poly group. It'll be on Wednesdays. That is what we have decided. I assume we haven't solidly nailed down a start date, but it'll be on Wednesdays, Wednesday evenings. It is for anyone who is currently poly, interested in poly. I think I'm so down and open to, it's still kind of growing and figuring out what that looks like as far as if you are poly and you have a massive polycule, does everybody have to come?
Right.
We're still figuring those details out, and I am not opposed to that.
Yeah.
But I also don't want to say you have to bring the whole polycule.
It could just be you.
Yeah. It could just be you, and you can take what we talk about. I think it is, honestly, at its core, just a space to be able to have these sorts of conversations. Of like we kind of touched on earlier, I feel like it's been great for me to be able to see, oh, that's a cool idea of how you guys have your checking conversations or like, oh, that I really love how you reframed that jealousy piece, or I love that reassurance that you guys do. That's really cool. And so having a group of poly people that get to do things differently, and you get to bounce ideas off of each other, and you get to like work through jealousy with other people who know exactly what you're talking about, and work through the other issues that pop up, boundary resetting, sharing stuff, like that just feels really important, and understanding the community that we all exist in. So I just think that's kind of what it's for. When we get a solid start date, which should be soonish.
Yeah. So if you're curious, just holler at us.
Yeah. We'll link everything below.
All right, listeners. That's all we got for you today.
Come catch us again.
This has been another episode of But For Real, hosted by Valerie Martin and Emerson Ryder, and edited by Volt Productions. But For Real is produced by the Gaia Center for Embodied Healing. The Gaia Center offers individual, couples, and group therapy for clients across Tennessee and in person in our Nashville office, as well as coaching and other programs for clients worldwide. For show notes or to learn more about our work, visit GaiaCenter.co or find us on Instagram @TheGaiaCenter and @ButForRealPod. But For Real is intended for education and entertainment and is not a substitute for mental health treatment. Also, since we host this podcast primarily as humans rather than clinicians, we are not shy about sharing our opinions here on everything from snacks and movies to politicians and social issues. Thanks so much for listening to this episode. See you next time, bestie.